The Business Buzz Podcast.
The Business Buzz.
Good evening and welcome to the Business Buzz right here on VOW FM 88.1. We are broadcasting live from our studios right here in Bramfontein, and the time has just gone by 6:02 PM on a Thursday, which means it's time for the Business Buzz. This is your, you know, one place for your weekly roundup of business and economics news. My name is Mudiwa Mob Justice Gavas, and I'm joined in studio as always, by the ever lovely, Miss Slingy Wezondo. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Mudiwa?
No, I'm alright. Right. So previously Mike said that Slingy was sporting some new hair.
Oh, dear Lord, yeah.
So
Jesus.
Once again, I feel like the listeners they need to see inside and just see, you know, what we're dealing with here. But no, you look good. We see.
Thank you very much,
How's your week?
My week has been somewhat emotional, especially with like everything that's happening in the news.
Yeah.
I won't mention specifically, but there's like the trials that are currently happening. A very high profile trials happening at the moment that are just absolutely emotionally draining for the country. It's things that I wish that we could like sort out and solve once and for all. And just the entrepreneurial landscape in general is always just a war zone. So, but I feel like, you know, there are small victories and I'm appreciative of those.
Okay, cool.
Your week?
No, my week has been all right. Not too bad. But I see that in the rest of the economy, things are not as they should be. You spoke about entrepreneurs just now, and that's actually what we're going to be talking around. The issue of pitching your business or your idea or yourself. Because I feel like some of the skills that you use to pitch an idea are the same skills that you then use to pitch yourself in whatever capacity.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's what our show is going to be looking like. We're going to be talking to some people around actually pitching your business, and we're also going to be talking to some people around what happens once the pitch is done, you've succeeded, and it's now time to, you know, actually take the idea forward. Because, you know, sometimes we always focus funding. When it arrives, it's here. What do you actually then do? So that's what our show is going to be looking like. Also coming up for the rest of the hour, we're going to be having our business wrap. That's a part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trading business and economics news. And then Slingy is going to be telling us the state of our 100 rand in our Buffalo Index. And then on social media, Slingy, how can people keep in touch with us?
Okay, so our listeners can find and follow us on Voice of Wits FM 88.1. And they can also find us on the following social media platforms. On Facebook, we are VOW FM, Voice of Wits, and Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we are found at VOW FM, and our hashtag is Business Buzz. On WhatsApp, we are on 084-078-4912. And you can also stream us live on www.vowfm.co.za. And our podcasts are available on www.vits.journalism.co.za/business.
So yes, that's how our show is looking like. On the other side of this, we're getting into our business wrap. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz. It's time for us to get into the business wrap. That's a part of the show. We give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. And on the line, we're joined by our financial expert. We have Zanele Konene, who is from BDO Wealth Advisors. How are you, Zanele?
I'm good, and yourself, Mudiwa?
So how's the week been for you? How's the things in the news, and what could we be paying attention to? Because I feel like right now the big thing that a lot of people are paying attention to is this whole VBS saga that's been going on. Could you shed some light for us?
Yes. So when the first time I came across the VBS mutual bank was when that hashtag pay back the money was trending. And that was all about Jacob Zuma getting a loan from the VBS bank to pay off the improvements in his Nkandla home. And now I'm catching them again, and now they are trending. And now the hashtag is hashtag the great bank heist. And it should actually be hashtag the great mutual bank heist, because a mutual bank is different. Mutual bank is not like the big four. It has different regulations and different restrictions. For example, municipalities are not allowed to invest or place their monies in a mutual bank. And the reason for this is to ensure that the money or the investment for service delivery, for service delivery, is accessible. So what happened in February of this year, one of the municipalities wanted their money. And guess what? DBS Bank was like, we don't have the money. So they had liquidity issues.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the reasons why it's very important that we look at it as a mutual bank and not treat it like all the other big four. So the FRB picked this up instead, and then in March, they placed the DBS Bank under curatorship.
Yeah.
So when the FRB puts you under curatorship, it means that they believe you are savable. And also, they do this to protect the depositors and also to ensure that this risk does not fall into the financial system. So when FIB put them under curatorship due to the failure of leadership, and when I say leadership, I mean the board of directors, the executive management, that fails to manage the bank's rapid growth. They fail to manage funding. They fail to manage the liquidity. And now what we have is about 2 billion rand gone, and nobody knows what's happening. But in November, what our finance committee wants to do, or what they're going to be doing in November, is they're going to be meeting up with the law enforcement agencies, the Hawks, the National Prosecuting Authority, as well as other regulatory bodies, to come to the bottom of what actually happened, what led to this, and why couldn't we pick it up so we make sure that it does not happen again. And I know that Peter Boyden, our new finance minister, yay! he will be touching on this matter next week in the midterm budget speech. And he wants to make sure that tough action is taken against the wrong, the people who've done us wrong. But I want to ask you, Liwa, do you think that all the wrongdoers must join or follow Vavenda King Tony Peter and pay back the money? Or what do you think should happen?
The problem with this situation is just the fact that there's nothing unusual about a bank having liquidity issues, because the nature of a bank and how they make money is the fact that depositors deposit, and then part of those deposits have to be loaned out, and then they earn interest, all of that stuff. So from that point of view, nothing untoward. But the fact that the money has just disappeared and it doesn't look like it's going to come back, I think people should be held to account. And those that we do know that they are responsible for the disappearance of the 2 billion, they definitely need to bring the money back. I mean, we really need to think about the depositors at the end of the day, because people are literally playing a game of monopoly with money that does not belong to them. Do you know what I mean? So that's what I'm worried about. Yes, I think people should pay back the money, mainly because, once again, the depositors, all those people that weren't able to get bank accounts at your traditional institutions and stuff like that, they are at risk. You've got life savings and the like. It's a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crisis.
And the thing about it, it's not only them who are affected, you know, with their life savings. We also have municipalities, and that's the big one. We already as a country have a really bad service delivery, but now there's literally no money. And how is service delivery going to happen? The employees of these municipalities, who's going to pay them? And in the beginning of the VBS, what they used to, the investors or the depositors were small businesses. And also stock sales. So what happens to those households? The problem with in such situations happening, of such corruption, I call it, happens, it is those people, it is low-income earners that are mostly affected. And it's like they don't have a voice in the system. In April of this year, the Financial Sector Regulation Act, which was enforced on the 1st of April of this year, and what it wants to do, or what it's aiming to do, is to give a right to investigate such cases in financial institutions to pick up when such irregularities are happening. And I hopefully that would help to ensure that in the future we don't face the exact same thing. And another group of people that were affected was the PIC. 25% of the investment was in the DBS mutual bank. So this is government pension funds. These are employees. What happens to them? So with the loss of people who've been affected by it, I think that the committee that's meeting in November, I hope that they come up with a good solution and implement it and are able to save it, because that's one of the comments I've been reading, that the aim is to save VBS Mutual Bank. Because it represents more than just the bank. It represents diversity as well as transformation in the financial industry, or in the financial, within the financial industry or the financial sector. So it plays an important role in that position as well. All I'm hoping for is the best. I always hope for the best, because in South Africa, we have our downs, but we come up at the end of the day.
We have our downs, but we do come up. That was us on the line with Zanele Konene, who is our financial expert from BDO Wealth Advisors, giving us a roundup of the week's business news. And the main story that people are talking about is the VBS banking scandal. As you heard from what Zanele was talking about, one of the big issue is the people that have actually invested through deposits into the bank, people like the PIC, the municipalities, together with all the people, individual South Africans whose money might possibly be gone forever. What actually happens? How do we account? And is the bank going to continue going forward? These are the questions that we need to ask, and we will be keeping an eye on this story. But we need to continue with the show. On the other side of this, Lengiwe is coming, and she's going to be telling us about the state of your 100 rand in our Buffalo Index. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz. Business Buzz.
Welcome back. We are talking business, pitching, funding yourself and the like. But we just came from giving you our business wrap, and right now it's time for us to get into our Buffalo Index. Lengiwe, how's our 100 Rand looking this week?
The 100 Rand is looking good this week. Basically, I'm trying to help you secure that investment bag.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to be looking at a number of competitions, that pitching competitions that currently run. Entry into pitching competitions isn't usually come at a charge, so we're going to be looking at what you can get out of the competitions. So the first one we're going to be looking at is Seed Stars World Competition, and they're a global network that runs over 80 local pitching competitions.
Oh, wow.
There's one in Cape Town, Johannesburg, that's happening in November. Their investments are across different sectors, but particularly the financial sectors, the healthcare, and real estate. The winner gets flown to Switzerland to compete in a global competition where they get a chance to win over $1 million in investment. That's over 14 million rand.
Yes, please.
Of course, that doesn't just, you know, go to one startup. It's broken up into various smaller investments. So, like prizes specifically for life sciences and education, those are around 50k in dollars, so around 700,000 rand. So there's also like a specific focus on women entrepreneurs, Africa energy, startups, and so forth. And then we have the Shiva's Venture. This is particularly for social entrepreneurs from certain countries, including South Africa. And in the global final, you can win a share of $1 million again. But this is a no-strings-attached kind of win, so no equity expectations. The finalists get to say how much funding they need, but ultimately the pot gets broken up into smaller pieces, and some of the winners are chosen through a public online vote while the judges allocate the rest. It's been running since 2014, and over the years they've supported three South African companies, most recently being iDrop in 2017, that won $52,000 in funding, and they are a water purification and dispensing unit for retail outlets. And that, so that was our second one. And then our third one is the Innovation Prize for Africa. And this is specifically to strengthen African innovation ecosystems, including health and well-being, information, communication, tech, and manufacturing and service industries. It has a slightly smaller grand prize of $185,000, but the winner gets $100,000 of that, and a lot more. You know, it's a lot more than the other competitions. And this year, one of the nominees for the prize is this African professor, Kiolebohile, Shirley Mutawong, and she's developed an affordable alternatives to treatments for bone repair and musculoskeletal injuries. So those are our three competitions that our entrepreneurs can take part in.
Yeah, hey, some of these prize monies, yeah, I would do it, yeah.
They just make you want to just start tomorrow, be like, where the pitching competition's at.
Yeah. It's interesting. I would go literally, I'm trying to think which one is interesting. Innovation Prize for Africa, I just like it because you know that if you win, 100,000 is yours.
Exactly,
like,
you bag the most.
Yes.
A bigger bag.
Yeah,
yes.
It's all about securing the bag.
Yes, secure the bag, Modio, secure the bag.
So we're going to be talking about pitching your business and securing the bag in our main topic on the other side of this.
You're tuned in to the Business Bus.
Welcome back to the show. Remember that we are available on Facebook at VAU FM, Voice of Wits, and Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we are available at VAU FM, and our hashtag is BusinessBuzz. Today, we have on the line Donna Rachelson, who is the Group CEO of Seed Engine and Seed Academy. And she is going to be telling us a bit more on all things investor relations related. So we can't wait to hear about that. Hello, Donna.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
Yeah, all good, all great.
Okay, awesome. So as a starting point, I think we'd just like you to define what venture capitalism is and what seed funding is for us.
Okay, so I think, you know, as entrepreneurs in South Africa, I always refer to funding as being the lifeblood of a business. And it's really important at the stages that an entrepreneur moves from a build phase to a grow phase and to a scale phase. And based on that, there are different kinds of funding. So normally what you would do is you would go out and get some initial kind of seed funding, which would be, I normally say, from family, friends, and fools. And then kind of, you know, as your business builds and grows, you may very well kind of go out to an angel investor who are kind of high net worth private individuals who have an interest in investing in business. And they may very well give you some seed capital for your business, which would imply that they would also take a bit of an equity stake in your business. As your business kind of grows, the next kind of level of funding is what we refer to as venture capital funding, which is really a type of private equity, but it's much more focused on smaller, earlier stage businesses that are deemed to have high growth potential or have demonstrated high growth to date. And then kind of after venture capital funding, you would then find kind of the next tier of funding, which would be your private equity funding.
Awesome. And what's been the general mood and sentiment in the South African entrepreneurial ecosystem around seed funding?
So look, I think, you know, there is lots of funding out there. There are many DFIs, many, you know, government institutions, many kind of corporates that have funds. And in fact, I read there's something by Catalyst for Growth that says, you know, there's like $2.6 billion available for enterprise supply development kind of funding. And that's just kind of in the corporate realm and DFI as well. But unfortunately, venture seed capital is quite risky, you know, so people want to ensure that they get a return on their funds. So it's not as easy to get as people envisage. So although there's lots out there, it's not that easy to get your hands on that funding.
Your business, primarily, it builds other businesses by providing them with like high impact business development supports and access to markets. What is the business case for venture capitalists to fund ideas and small businesses? And how does one know when they are funding ready?
Okay, so that's a really, really important point. So In terms of our fund, the WDB Growth Fund, we really have some criteria. So we will not fund a startup. And what you'll find is a lot of seed capital aren't really, don't have an appetite to fund startups. So you need to demonstrate that you have some traction in your business. And that's either through, you know, having a few large clients or you've experienced some large kind of growth in the period that you've been around. You also need to show beyond traction that there are good opportunities for growth through letters of intent or, you know, potential clients that have showed strong interest to kind of get involved with your business. You need to show that there's a path for growth and that there's a lot of opportunity in the industry that you are competing in. And very, very importantly, that you have a really clearly defined value proposition, that you are able to compete successfully, and that you do have a business model to support that. And something else that venture capitalists look for is, you know, who is the team involved? So they're much more likely to kind of back a team of complementary skills as opposed to an entrepreneur who is, you know, doing this alone. You made reference to funding readiness. That is something that, in our experience, entrepreneurs do not pay enough attention to, is really ensuring that you have management accounts that are produced in the business every single month, that there are robust financial models for the business, in terms of projected income statement, cash flow, balance sheet, etc. So that is something that we find entrepreneurs don't place enough emphasis on, but is absolutely critical if you require funding.
That is absolutely insightful. So record. And I think, what are some of the programs that you guys have and interventions that you guys have to assist entrepreneurs to access desired markets?
So we have two parts. So Seed Engine has two parts to the business. Seed Academy, which is an activation business. So we're really focusing on entrepreneurs that are in the build and grow phase. So they've either got an idea or they've started their business. It's got a little bit of traction, but it needs quite a bit of help. We really, bespoke our offering for each entrepreneur in terms of understanding what are the gaps in the context of the business, as well as from a personal leadership perspective, because great entrepreneurs have strong personal leadership capabilities as well. And then we able to provide high-impact business development support through coaching and mentoring. We also work with those businesses to become funding-ready, as well as helping them with access to markets by, you know, assisting them with networks to new opportunities. And then, you know, we like to work with them to scale them through our venture capital fund, which is called the WDB Growth Fund, where we take an equity stake in the business. It's normally a minority stake. And what we want to do is we want to work with that business as a minority shareholder for up to 5 years to really scale that business to such an extent that after 5 years, the entrepreneur can actually buy back their shares. And we really focused on providing very close support from a strategic perspective, from a marketing perspective, from a financial aspect, from a governance and compliance aspect, any way that we can to ensure that that business grows systematically.
And once the founders have managed to secure the investment, what processes are in place to ensure that there is accountability in terms of how funds are spent?
So look, you know, venture capitalists, they tend to play more of a hands-on role in the business because it's quite a young business. Mm-hmm. And what that venture capital company is going to do is they're going to open up their networks, they're going to provide robust strategic input. They're also going to test the business model and make sure that it works. But very, very important, and it's probably one of the key things that we look out for, is that the entrepreneur is coachable. is that they're really open to new perspectives. They're open to looking at new ways of doing things. Otherwise, if you have a very rigid approach as an entrepreneur, it's not going to be easy for a venture capitalist to work with you. So those are kind of the aspects of what venture capitalists can give, but also what the entrepreneur, what mindset they need to have.
What are the common misconceptions about VCs?
I think the common misperceptions sit in terms of people don't really have a clear understanding of where they are placed in the funding ecosystem. So it is quite risky capital. So, you know, venture capitalists are quite astute people in terms of really being able to understand the entrepreneur and the business potential. But they're also not private equity. So they're not that kind of like hands off in your business. A private equity, if they meet, you know, every month or 3 months or whatever, it's fine. Whereas, you know, especially with our experience of our venture capital fund, is you need to play a lot more of a hands-on kind of role. The other misperception is, you know, there's different kinds of funding. There's grant funding where you just give them the money. There's loan funding where, you know, hopefully there's a preferential interest rate on that loan. And then there's equity funding, which is kind of a venture capital fund. And in our experience, a lot of entrepreneurs are averse to having an equity partner and giving away shareholding. So for me, a key misperception is that it's bad to give shareholding. And the way that I like to look at it is often it's much better to have a smaller part of a much bigger pie than owning the whole pie but not being able to expand the business significantly. So if you're able to find a venture capitalist that really can play an integral role in helping your business to scale, it's far more beneficial.
And once that, you know, the connection is made between the entrepreneur and the VC, like, what are some of the things that entrepreneurs can look out for to try and maintain that healthy relationship between the two parties?
Sure, that's such a good question. So for me, and it's just because I've also invested in 4 businesses, so I sit as kind of a shareholder in those businesses. You know, really important what I look for is open communication, so regular communication in terms of what is happening in the business, and most importantly is honesty. You know, everybody experiences ups and downs in businesses, and the more you are able to be honest with your shareholders and alert them to potential risks in the business, what you're doing to mitigate the risks, and also importantly, where you need assistance and support to actually grow. Also, what I really love with entrepreneurs is where they take the lead, where they're proactive and they're driving things, and not having misplaced perceptions that kind of the shareholders need to do all the work and chase after them. But also, what I say to entrepreneurs is that who you go into business with is more important than who you marry. It's a lot easier to get divorced from somebody than it is to actually part from a business relationship.
Thank you so much for that. And our last question before we part is for people who are on the outside who are still knocking on the door and are still seeking to secure that investment bag and get to the next level, what nuggets of wisdom or advice do you have for those people?
Look, I think what's really important is your network is incredibly important. So it doesn't matter how brilliant your pitch is or how brilliant you think your business is, you've actually got to be in the right networks. You've got to be talking to people. You've got to be researching which are the best places for you to be pitching your kind of business because there's so many kind of funding opportunities out there. So that is incredibly important. And really, really important is you need to have a really strong value proposition. You know, it's highly competitive out there in terms of entrepreneurs, and you've got to make sure that your business is different, that it stands out, and that it has the that it's scalable, that you know, it has the potential to make big money, because ultimately investors want a return on their investment.
So that was Donna Rachelson, who's the group CEO of Seed Engine and Seed Academy. For more information, you can go to www.seedengine.co.za and you can find out all information related to seed investment and seed funding and access to market there. Thank you so much, Donna, for your time.
The Business Buzz.
So this past Saturday, there was an amazing event for entrepreneurs within Gauteng, and this is the Engine Pitch and Polish. And this is a wonderful opportunity for entrepreneurs within the space to groom their pitching skills, as well as to put themselves out there and win money prizes, amongst other things, which are essential in terms of developing one's business. And in the next few minutes, we're going to get to hear from the regional winner that makes it to the next part of the competition. And we're also going to hear from a few key players, as well as Raise Corp CEO, Mr. Alan Raise. And just a number of things around the competition that are interesting is that each round has prize money that's available for the successful contestants. And you have a panel of expert judges that make these selections, so you are able to be rest assured that you're getting the cream of the crop as the regional winner who gets to represent us in Gauteng, and we cannot be prouder of her, and we listen to her in a few minutes. Keep it locked, because we really do want you to make that money.
Well, my name is Matlazi Rampa.
And where are you from?
I am born and bred in Joburg.
So tell me, your Engine Pitch and what were you expecting from Engine Pitch and Polish today?
The classic thing about the pitch and polish today is that I actually just came as, you know, one of the, you know, not contestants. I wasn't expecting to be selected to actually pitch. So I actually thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to learn so much. I'm going to understand, you know, how to actually pitch well so that I can actually grow my business. So when I was nominated and selected to be one of the contestants, it was absolutely amazing. And I thought to myself, maybe there's a calling, you know, maybe I need to polish my pitch, you know. So it's absolutely amazing. And so I do expect that at the end, I will be able to pitch properly and it will be too sound.
So tell us a bit about your business. What is its name and what do you do?
The name of my business is called Sun Diverse Group, and we manufacture paints, so acrylic paints. We also have various other products, which is Gamazine, Glamour Coat, and Cornice. So my specialty is PVA acrylic paint.
And what preparation do you feel you need to do to be ready for round two?
Look, it's about, in order to prepare myself for the next round, I need to research, I need to polish my pitch. So the three words that's going to describe my experience here is actually exhilarating, exciting, and a learning curve. Well, I think one of the things that I've learned is that you need to understand your business. You need to understand how to position yourself, and you have to have almost a competitive advantage. So how I feel, I actually feel like a winner. I actually feel like a winner. If I be honest, that's how I feel. One element about my business that I didn't know and now I need to actually explore into is just my value proposition. My solid value proposition, not too broad, but straight to the point.
What's the one thing for you that business school does?
The one thing that business schools doesn't teach entrepreneurs is to be resourceful and flexible in the moment. They teach in the theory, which is very much around you move from A to B to C to D, but they don't teach you what happens if something happens halfway in. How do you get around it? And that's far more important.
Okay, with an incubator.
Yes.
There's a lot of incubators in South Africa. What would you say is the uniqueness of this?
Don't have enough time for that. So let me start off with our kudos. We, according to The Economist, are the only genuine incubator in Africa. That's number one. Number two, our selection process is globally recognized, from the World Economic Forum to Oxford, etc., as the toughest selection process within incubation. So we choose the right people, and nowhere in there do we look at a business plan. We only look at what we call blue heart, that ability to stand up again and again. Number three, our model is highly intensive and programmatic, and we don't provide mentors. We provide what we call guides, and there's not one, there's five. A strategy guide, a finance guide, a marketing guide, a sales guide, and a personal development guide. That team works with the entrepreneur. All our learning material is practical and has been accredited by the CHE. And I can go on and on and on. None of these things are you can say about any of the others. And we've been doing this for 18 years.
So,
yes.
It's a long time. And any last advice you can give an entrepreneur?
Any entrepreneur or any entrepreneur who wants to give up? Any entrepreneur wants to give up, first of all, don't. For as long as you can ask a different question, for as long as you can get a different answer, keep going. The moment you can't ask yourself new questions and you can't get new answers, that's the time to stop.
For the traveling that you've been doing in South Africa, any differences that you think each farmer can benefit from, any things that need to be, improved for more than 2 years that you've been
here? I think each province that we see has got different opportunities within those provinces. There's different programs that are going on, different infrastructure programs, different from an economy point of view, there's structural differences. So, for example, some might be in agriculture, some might be more in mining, some might be more in manufacturing, and those then represent where the opportunities are for entrepreneurs. So any entrepreneur that's starting out and is thinking where to go should think of the macro context first within their province before moving forward.
On the line, we are joined by Justin Cohen, who is an international speaker and author, and also the host of CNBC Africa's show called Gurus. His latest book is called Pitch to Win, and he has been involved with Pitch and Polish for some time now. Justin actually speaks and trains in the field of motivation, sales, customer service, and leadership, and he's looking at about 8,000 people. Can you imagine that? 8,000 people annually on average, and he's actually been a certified speaker professional and a Southern African Speaker Hall of Fame inductee. Very impressive. How are you, Justin?
Yeah, great to be on the show with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being with us. For us to begin our discussion, in the description of your book, it actually says that being the best doesn't guarantee that you'll get the business. Having the best pitch does. Why is pitching so important?
Well, you know, I think we're all taught from pretty early on at school and then university that all we really need to do is be great at what we do.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you think about it, that's what education, high education is all about. Just develop your technical skills, be really great, and it'll happen for you.
Yeah.
And I believe that. I really did. I thought all I need to do is write great books. All I needed to do is put together great training programs. All I needed to do is do great presentations. And then I noticed that sometimes there were people whose book or presentation was not as great as mine, but they were doing a lot better than me.
Yeah.
You know, I might have even been up for the same deal with someone who was offering something that I truly didn't believe had the same value and was sometimes even at a higher price, and they won it instead of me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something that I think just about anyone in business has encountered. Anyone in business. You ask, you know, when I ask audiences, I say, how have you ever felt that you really were the right person for that job, but you didn't get it? And almost everybody puts their hands up. And what does that tell you? Well, it tells you if we really are correct, I mean, look, we could be a bit self-deluded, and maybe we're not the best, and maybe we need to improve our skills. But definitely, I think we can all appreciate that at times we truly are the best, and we don't get it. Well, then it's not enough to be the best. You've got to have the best pitch. You've got to have the ability to persuade someone that you're the best. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's all about persuasion. It's all about pitching, because if you pitch yourself and you really aren't great and you're really not able to do this job effectively, well, it's going to come back to bite you. So I don't want to say that it's not important to build your skills,
yeah.
But all I'm saying is that's not enough.
So now that we've established the fact that, you know, sometimes just having that technical skill isn't always enough, or having that good business idea isn't enough, that you do need to make that pitch. What are some of the factors that actually make a pitch effective, or how do people get their pitches correct in whatever platform they're on?
Right. So there's a six-step formula that I developed.
Yeah.
I call it the TOPS formula. It's a six specific steps. And these aren't just me going and reading some books and putting some ideas together. I actually created this formula firstly for myself. My own results really exploded as I started to apply it. But then I actually never thought I'd share it with anyone. I never really saw this as part of my mission.
Yeah.
But then I had clients saying to me, Justin, you know, you've spoken a bit about this. Will you share this with us?
Yeah.
And they started getting the results. So really the first and one of the biggest was IBM Smart Camp. They run the biggest entrepreneurship competition in the world.
Yeah.
And I work with a little startup from Kenya. And these guys landed up winning the entire competition and actually gave this method some of the credit. And then, of course, Engine Pitch and Polish,
yeah.
Which I've been really proud to be part of. Similar things. So we work with entrepreneurs all over the country, and you know, Lon Reyes from Reyes Corp has got a lot of his own methodology, which is fantastic, and I'm very honored to be able to facilitate. But this is also where I got to share this formula and see its power. So first things first, yes, this formula really does work, but that was a long way to get to my to your question.
Yeah.
Your question is, well, what are some of the things? Well, look, firstly, the first, well, it's TOPS formula, so the first key is tune in. You know, we have the sense that the pitch is all about me, my product, my brand, my skills.
Yeah.
You know, I would imagine anybody who's leaving university is going out for a job. You're thinking it's all about you. I've got news for you. It's not about you. It's about them.
it's about them.
The company.
Yeah.
It's about what you can do for them. The truth is, I know this is going to sound harsh, they don't care about you. They don't. They don't really care about you. They care about themselves. They care about their own profitability. They
yeah.
care about succeeding and thriving. And I think far too many graduates leave university thinking that, you know, it's all about how fabulous they are. Now, listen, I hope that you're fabulous. But really, it's about how fabulous that company is and how you can make them even more fabulous, right?
Yeah.
So tuning in means really understanding the company. I mean, if you're going about it, pitching, you're going to be pitching a product or service. You could just be pitching yourself for a job. It's about like how do you put yourself for a job interview? Now, I think, you know, to go in with your CV, and that's all fine, you know, that's what you can do, you can do this and do the other, but have you actually taken the time to figure out who is this organization? What are they about? What do they want? What is their culture? What do they like? What are they after, right? So when you're in that pitch, you can really, half the pitch, probably more than half the pitch, is
yeah.
talking about them, not
it's
yourself.
About them, yeah.
You know, I use the example of going on a date. You never go on a date and just, you know, you go on a date and immediately the guy says to you, listen, I just want you to know I'm extremely smart. And not only am I extremely smart, well, you can say I dress absolutely beautifully. And not only that, I am incredible in bed. Right? So if you go on a second date with that guy, no, he's a douche, right? Because all he did is spoke about himself. Now, admittedly, the client or your company is probably going to ask you to talk about yourself, and that's fine. But, you know, certainly, and job interview is slightly different here, but certainly in a general pitch, what I would always say is thank you so much for the opportunity to share what my product or service does. But first, I want to understand what do you want to achieve here? You know, what are the challenges that you're currently facing so that I can then match my product, my service to meeting their needs? So it's
yeah.
really about listening. Your first step is listen, figure them out. And yes, job interviews, I say, might be slightly different.
Mm.
You know, they're gonna ask the questions you're going to need to answer. But tune in beforehand so that when you do answer, you're answering in accord with an understanding of what this business is all about. So that ultimately you can show them how you can add value.
Yeah. And then the others?
So your second key to a winning pitch is the team. Now, some of the people that I work with and coach, they will actually go in and pitch with a team. But if you're not pitching with a team and you're just pitching on your own, it's team is still important because, you know, no man is an island. We're all interconnected, and our ability to perform is largely dependent on the relationships that we have with our team. Particularly when you are pitching as a team, the client, potential client, is looking to how you guys interact because they know that your ability to perform is going to largely have to do with how cohesive you are as a team.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the book, I go into a lot of detail about how you can create a strong team. So it's about lighting. You know, one of the things we know is that high affinity teams are high performance teams.
Mm.
You know, if we like one another, we will tend to perform well. But if we don't like one another, we won't, you know. And you know, a lot of people say, well, I just don't like that person. Well, the truth is most people get married, love each other, and yet most people married get divorced and hate each other, which tells you that it's the same people can hate or love each other.
Yeah.
It's not about the people. It's about what we do.
Yeah.
It's what are the things that we can do to create a team that is brimming with positivity, that has a good spirit, because that emotion is really, really critical to success. So there's a study which I quote a lot in the book, 10 Reasons Why They Choose One Pitcher Over Another. The number one reason is energy and enthusiasm.
Mm.
Now, if you've got disconnect, discord with your team, you don't like each other, you're rubbing each other the wrong way, you're not going to be very energized, positive, and enthusiastic. So it's really important to get the team dynamics right.
Justin, I'm just going to ask you in the interest of time, because I know that you said that it's a 6-step process, for you to list the other four.
Sure. So the third one is optimism.
Yeah.
So that is your belief that you can get the deal. Now, let me just be very clear about this. Most of the time, you're not going to get the deal. Most of the time, you're not going to get the job.
Yeah.
But, and that's very important to understand, because if you expect, oh, I'm going to get it, then you don't. You get all demoralized. You're going to give up. But if you understand that you're not getting it, don't even take it personally, because it takes on average 7 exposures to a new product, service, or person before people feel comfortable enough to buy.
Yep.
7 exposures. That means you're probably going to hear the word no more than yes. Optimism is the mindset of people who will persist through those no's.
That's
why it's really important when you do hear no, when you are rejected, to bounce back up, understand that, you know, the biggest failures never fail. They sit on the sidelines thinking why it's not going to work. And they're always right, because you can't score a goal if you don't get on the field and try.
That's
true. If you do get on the field and lose, there's always a lesson to win. So if you did get rejected, ask yourself, pick yourself up. No, you probably need 7 exposures, but ask yourself, what could I learn? How can I bounce back? That's just part of it. Your next P is presence. Now, presence is your nonverbal communication. And the research shows us that more than 50% of the impact of a communication is not what we say, but how we say it.
Yeah.
We're talking tone of voice, facial expressions, posture, body language, gestures. How do you come across? And I think a great thing to do, even if you're looking, I know some people listening to this might actually be going thinking about job interviews, record yourself. Really, record yourself on camera. At first, it's a bit scary looking at yourself, but you'll get over that. We all get over that. You know, it's a bit odd initially to look at yourself. But you will see yourself doing things, funny things, odd things that you can then start to make, you know, your posture. I don't know, it's like that your posture's all, you know, crouched, or you've got a big frown, or you don't smile a lot, or you've got this closed body language with your arms folded, and you'll immediately see it. So really record. What you're aiming for is open, positive body language, lots of eye contact, lots of smiling. That's the ideal kind of presence that we want to create. Now, the next P, there's 2 P's, so it's the TOPS formula, T-T-O-P-P-S.
Yeah.
The next P is purpose.
Purpose.
And purpose is about, why are you there? You know, what is the difference you're trying to make? Are you just trying to get the deal? Are you just trying to get the job so you can get a salary?
Yeah.
Are you just trying to get it for yourself? Or are you actually trying to make a difference? And people can feel it. I mean, I want to ask you, who are you going to employ? Who are you going to employ? Somebody you feel who just is in it for themselves, they just want to get a nice job and get a nice, or somebody who really is passionate about making a difference to your company.
Yeah.
Obviously, you want the person who really is committed to making a difference. That's purpose. And the truth is, we can all live on purpose or off purpose. You want to ask yourself, how are they going to be better off because of me? That question triggers purpose. Ask yourself, how are they going to be better off because of me? Now, what is the value that I, when you're committed to really making a difference, they can feel that, man.
Yeah.
They can feel that. And that's a huge part, I believe, of why you will win.
Yeah.
If they truly believe that you're committed to making a difference, that you're driven by purpose.
Yeah.
And your S is story.
Story.
Now, story, and you know, I know we're short on time here. This is a big subject. I mean, I wrote an entire book on stories. Stories, let me try and put it really simply here and in summary. When we tend to talk, we talk in abstract concepts. And the truth is, university actually gets us to do this because it's all about passive language. It's about objective. It's not about personal storytelling. You think about the way you write an academic paper. It's all about the third person. And I understand for scientific reasons and objectivity, we need to do this. But when it comes to pitching and influencing and persuading, we're actually interested in the personal story, in the I. We want to know, give us an example. Margaret Thatcher used to say, if you have to tell people you're a lady, you probably are not one. If you have to tell me that you're conscientious and diligent, you may be, but there's a bigger chance you're not. Don't tell me you're conscientious. Tell me a story, a true story, by the way.
Yeah.
Tell me a story about how this job you worked at, customer, was really frustrated, called you, at 2 in the morning, you took the call, you got in your car, you went through, obviously I'm kind of making this up on the fly, but you get my point. Don't tell me, tell me a story that demonstrates that you're conscientious, right? Give me a real example, yeah? Don't be scared of talking about even your setbacks and failures. Maybe you, as an entrepreneur, entrepreneurs that I work with, a lot of them have gone bankrupt. They failed. Tell me the story about how, what happened, how you messed up, but what you learned from it. Because people are investing, want to invest in people who've got experience, So an experience often comes out of failure.
Yeah.
So you can even share an example of when something went wrong, but like what you learned and how you fixed it, right? That would really show me that you were somebody who took accountability, who was industrious, right? So whenever you're trying to demonstrate something about you or your product, try to share a real life example rather than just telling me, that you are that thing.
Justin, we are out of time. How can people get a hold of your book?
So the book, Pitch to Win, is available at virtually all bookstores, Exclusive Books and others.
Yeah.
I guess we should try and get one into the Vitz Library. We'd be happy to donate one. If they want to connect with me, they can sign up on my website on www.justinpresents.com.
Yeah.
Justinpresents.com. Bunch of free resources there. I do a blog regularly, lots of videos on pitching all there. Check that out. And then obviously for Pitch Engine, Pitch and Polish, if they just Google Engine, Pitch and Polish, they can sign up for the next Pitch and Polish workshops.
Okay, cool. That was us on the line with Justin Cohen, who is an international speaker and author. He was talking to us on behalf of Engine, Pitch and Polish, just around some of the tips and techniques that you can use to either pitch yourself or to pitch your business. And he is the author of the book. It's called Pitch to Win. And he was just giving us a roundup of the formula that he's developed. It's called the TOPS formula. I think my takeaway from this is just the fact that when you are pitching yourself for a product or a service, a business, whatever it is that you're trying to communicate to other people, well, something I'm definitely getting from Justin is the fact that there needs to be a bit of a balance, because one of the first things he spoke about is that you need to communicate how you're going to add value to the person either investing in you or the person buying from you. But at the same time, the people need to know about your story or what you have to go on. So there's that balance of you showing yourself as a genuine person and the characteristics that you're trying to sell, but at the same time adding value to the people that you are pitching to. So that was us. We were with Justin Cohen. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the show. Keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
Mob Justice on The Business Buzz.
And with that, we come to the end of The Business Buzz show for today. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening to our show. Thank you to Justin. Thank you to Donna for just giving us some insights around funding. How do you keep your money? At what point do you seek funding? And how do you actually pitch your businesses? I think for me, the big takeaway from what Justin was saying is just you need to balance, what he was saying. The first point he said in his TOPS formula, is the fact that you need to show the investor or the person that you're talking to what's in it for them. No matter what situation you're in, if you're a guy proposing to a girl, if you're an investor, or if you're a business person pitching your business to an investor, or if you're in a job interview and you're trying to pitch your skills, you need to show the person that you're talking to what value you can add to them. That's where it's at. But at the same time, in as much as they don't care about you, they still want to know if you're a genuine person, because when they bring you on board, they need to be secure that you're going to bring value and you're going to be genuine about it. That was my takeaway. For you, Tlengiwe, like, how was the conversation with Donna?
The conversation with Donna was absolutely enlightening. Mm. I learned a number of things around seed investments, and one of the primary takeaways for me was it's important for entrepreneurs to understand where they are within their life cycle, so they understand when it is that they are like funding ready, because you can get monies before you are ready for them.
Yeah.
And I think there are situations even currently that are available where entrepreneurs have had, you know, monies afforded to them, and it was before their time, and it's actually can be detrimental to the business, because you know, the natural course to take or understanding is that, you know, the more money that one has, you know, the merrier. And sometimes when you do that prematurely, it can actually cost a company its actual business. So just the importance of understanding where you are in the life cycle and when it is that you're funding ready.
Okay, cool. So let us know on social media what you think. Have you ever taken funding? Are you looking for funding? Do you think some of the tips and tricks that we talked about in this show are going to help you in everyday life? Are you, as an entrepreneur, if you have a business, at that stage where you need to be funding or thinking about funding? Let us know. On Facebook, we are VowFM, that's Voice of Vids, and we can find our other Facebook page, that's Vids Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VowFM, and then our hashtag is #businessbuzz. Our WhatsApp line is 0840784912, and you can stream the station live on vowfm.co.za. And you can also find podcasts of the Business Buzz show on vitsa.journalism.co.za/business.
With that, we have reached the end of tonight's show. Thank you to our amazing team, executive producer Elna Schutz, our producer Welcome Lashiva, with our technical producer Kudrano Serame. Don't miss the Business Buzz, same time next week for more insight into the world of business. Next on Vow FM, we have Life Beats. From myself, Lingiwe Zondo, and Modiwa Mob Justice Gavaza, and the rest of the team, take care.
Mob Justice on the Business Buzz. Listen to the Business Buzz every Thursday from 6 to 7 p.m. only on Vow FM. The Business Buzz Podcast.